A red card that destroyed a career. A monarchy on the brink of irrelevance. A brand of soap that dared to challenge billion-dollar beauty standards. What transforms ordinary marketing into cultural earthquakes? 9 campaigns spanning politics, royalty, rock concerts, and social movements reveal a startling truth. The most powerful ideas don't just sell products or win elections. They rewire how millions of people see themselves and the world. These weren't campaigns that followed trends. They created them. From Margaret Thatcher's rise as Britain's first modern political communicator to Barack Obama's digital revolution, each story illuminates how strategic vision, authentic conviction, and bold execution can reshape reality itself. The difference between polishing apples and fundamentally changing how we perceive them lies in understanding one principle. Great campaigns don't interrupt culture, they become it. Britain in the late 1970s was broken. Strikes paralyzed the nation, garbage piled in streets, bodies went unburied. Into this chaos stepped Margaret Thatcher with something revolutionary. Politicians could be marketed like products. Her weapon? Tim Bell, an advertising maverick who grasped that emotions trump facts. The "Labor Isn't Working" poster became legendary, not for its budget, but its provocation, a fake unemployment cue that sparked outrage from Dennis Healey, generating millions in free media coverage. This was event advertising, creating spectacles that force conversation. When Prime Minister Callaghan returned from a Caribbean summit during Britain's Winter of Discontent, Bell collaborated with The Sun on the devastating headline, "Crisis? What crisis?" Callaghan never said those words, but the narrative stuck like tar. Thatcher's team pioneered demographic targeting, communicating feelings, security, strength, renewal, rather than policy minutiae. Her 1979 campaign established the template every modern politician follows: brand yourself before your opponents brand you. 15 years in opposition, a party synonymous with union chaos and economic disaster. Then, Tony Blair executed one of history's most disciplined political transformations, turning labor into new labor, and skeptical tabloids into cheerleaders. Unlike Thatcher's consultant client model, Blair embedded strategists as full team members. Alastair Campbell introduced The Grid, a strategic communications framework ensuring every message reinforced core themes. Philip Gould provided data-driven voter insights. Peter Mandelson supplied creative brilliance. The strategy crystallized in 4 words: New Labor, New Britain. But words alone don't transform brands. Symbolic actions do. Blair targeted Clause 4, Labor's constitutional commitment to nationalizing industry, signaling philosophical rebirth. Their boldest gambit? Flying to Australia to address Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation executives. This pilgrimage secured Murdoch's endorsement, a media earthquake that legitimized New Labor among traditionally conservative voters. By 1997, party membership had soared to nearly 500,000. Blair's entrance to Downing Street felt less like an election victory and more like a cultural coronation. The lesson? Rebranding isn't cosmetic. It requires killing your old identity and being reborn.
September 1997. Princess Diana dead. The royal family silent at Balmoral. Britain erupted in grief and rage. Prince Charles drove the transformation despite reputational damage. Spin doctor Mark Boland repositioned him as a caring single father through strategic trips with William and Harry. Operation PB aimed to make Camilla Parker Bowles publicly acceptable, a delicate mission given Diana's enduring popularity. The strategy balanced tradition with modern adaptation. Patty Harverson's 2004 arrival brought a shift toward broadcast media and documentaries showcasing Prince Harry's compassionate side during Lesotho volunteering. William and Kate's 2011 wedding, the biggest ever live internet event, boosted public support 15 percentage points. The key insight? Authenticity means revealing the right things strategically, making audiences feel they're seeing the real you, while maintaining essential mystique. The Rolling Stones in 1981 faced brutal reality. Punk had branded them dinosaurs. Mick Jagger saw opportunity. he took unprecedented control of the 1981-82 tour, overseeing every detail from stage design to media strategy. Most radically, he signed corporate sponsors, TDK and Jovan Musk, selling exclusive advertising rights for $1 million, heresy in rock culture. Jagger understood albums could become tour mementos rather than the primary product. He pioneered controlling merchandise, logos, and concert film distribution, recognizing that content exploitation would define music's future. His grasp of brand architecture, that intellectual property rights and strategic partnerships could generate more revenue than record sales, established the template every major artist now follows. The lesson transcends music. Those who control distribution and branding control destiny. July 1998. David Beckham, red-carded at the World Cup, became Britain's most hated man. Tabloids printed his image as a dartboard. Death threats arrived daily. Instead of collapsing, Beckham orchestrated history's most remarkable reputation rebuild. PR advisor Alan Edwards found a footballer with unexpected vision, supporting women's sports, fighting racism and homophobia, developing American soccer. With wife Victoria, who built her own fashion empire, Beckham positioned himself beyond football. Edwards secured exposure in non-sports magazines like Esquire, unconventional territory for footballers then. Manager Simon Fuller structured the 2007 LA Galaxy deal strategically. $32.5 million base salary, but potentially $250 million total, including rights to buy an MLS franchise for just $25 million, one quarter the typical cost. The 2003 Adidas Lifetime sponsorship worth $160 million represented the biggest commercial contract in sport history. Beckham pioneered blurring lines between sport, fashion, and entertainment, proving that reputation isn't what you've done, it's what people believe you represent, turning crisis into competitive advantage.
London 2012 overcame crushing skepticism. 2005 terrorist attacks, 2011 riots, budget overruns, through strategic communications centered on five themes: engaging youth, transforming East London, inspirational sport, cultural celebration, and accessibility. Their mission? To inspire a generation. Results proved transformative. The 2010 volunteer campaign drew 250,000 applications for 70,000 positions. The May 2012 torch relay reached 95% of the UK, attracting 15 million spectators. When G4S failed to deliver security personnel 2 weeks before opening, LOCOG deployed 3,500 troops whose presence enhanced the atmosphere. Danny Boyle's hashtag Save the Surprise campaign asked 7,500 volunteers to protect ceremony secrets. Only three pictures leaked, which social media users voluntarily removed. Post-games research showed 83% said the games made Britain proud, and 80% believed it improved the UK's global image. Product Red proved equally transformative. After witnessing HIV patients in Malawi lacking 40-cent life-saving pills, Bono and Bobby Shriver convinced corporations to donate profits while consumers shop guilt-free, raising over $300 million for the Global Fund. Matthew Freud pivoted from advertising to a PR-led movement at Davos 2006. American Express donated 1% of spending, Gap gave 50% of profits from its line, Apple contributed over $100 million. Red revolutionized cause marketing through co-branding, an umbrella enabling continuous support rather than one-off donations, proving doing good and doing well aren't mutually exclusive. In late 2006, Barack Obama, a 45-year-old, two-year senator, faced impossible odds against Hillary Clinton and John McCain. Yet his campaign mobilized disillusioned voters, created a 13 million strong network, and raised over $650 million, primarily through small online donations, by pioneering the first truly digital general election. Obama's team treated primaries as sequential state contests, focusing intensely on Iowa to disrupt Clinton early. They positioned Obama as the challenger brand, attracting young people and African Americans. The campaign built digital infrastructure centered on BarackObama.com with organizing and fundraising tools.
Biden's selection was announced exclusively via text message, adding 2 million mobile numbers to their database. When the 2008 financial crisis hit, Obama positioned himself as global economic spokesman. The campaign succeeded through a tight, loyal team, a fixed strategy understood at every level, an authentic change message, and groundbreaking use of new technologies, establishing the template for every campaign since. Over 50% of women surveyed said their own body disgusted them. Only 2% considered themselves beautiful. These findings drove Sylvia Lignao to create Dove's Campaign for Real Beauty, redefining purpose-driven marketing. Lignao's team discovered 75% of women wanted more diversity in beauty imagery. Rather than making product claims, the strategy promoted an inclusive, democratic notion of beauty. The advertising featured diverse women with tick box options like outsized or outstanding, or gray or gorgeous, publishing controversial results to spark conversation. In 2006, Dove embraced social media. Ogilvy Toronto created Evolution, showing a normal woman transformed into a glamorous billboard model through makeup and digital editing, ending with, "No wonder our perception of beauty is distorted." Without paid advertising, it garnered 3 million YouTube views within 3 months. By 2012, Real Beauty Sketches featured an FBI-trained sketch artist drawing women based first on their self-descriptions, then on strangers' descriptions, revealing how women see themselves more critically than others do. The campaign succeeded because it felt authentic, purposeful positioning from the heart. It evolved from advertising into a movement, democratizing beauty standards, with the brand defined by the voice of the people rather than the marketing department. The most powerful campaigns don't sell products. They challenge the assumptions that make people feel inadequate, then offer liberation. What separates campaigns that fade from those that reshape culture? Vision and authenticity provide the foundation. Margaret Thatcher's conviction-driven authenticity inspired loyalty despite criticism. Tony Blair's Clause 4 moment signaled genuine transformation. The royal family's strategic vulnerability humanized an ancient institution. Future campaigns face mounting challenges establishing trust amid digital clutter. Edelman's Trust Barometer shows declining trust in traditional institutions, with consumers trusting people like myself most, highlighting social media's crucial role. Campaign stars share key traits: entrepreneurial spirit, charisma, intellectual curiosity, and strong communication skills. Great campaigns don't just interrupt culture, they become it. People don't buy products, politicians, or ideas. They buy better versions of themselves. In a world drowning in messages, world-shaking campaigns make people feel seen, understood, and empowered. They don't manipulate, they liberate. They don't impose, they invite. They don't sell, they inspire. Whether marketing soap or electing presidents, the principle remains. Authenticity, strategic vision, and genuine conviction transform ordinary communication into movements that reshape reality itself. The question isn't whether you can shake the world, it's whether you believe in something worth shaking it for.